America from CIA. Hey, everybody, I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Bizarro World. This is the 371st episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, what we're investing in, America's 250th birthday. Happy Canada Day to my friends up north here this past week. We're going to talk gold. We're going to talk dollar indexes. We're going to talk Supreme Court. There's a whole heck of a lot to get into and a whole heck of a lot to do before we get into it. And before we do it, Mr. Hodge, how goes you today, fine sir?
Doing good, Gerardo, getting into the heat of summer, as I know many of our European and East Coast friends are. Happy 4th to you and the rest of the nation, and happy Canada Day, as you said, to the folks up north. Congratulations on Mexico continuing to advance, as well as the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was screaming it up, man. I'm telling you.
I don't know how he held that one that long. I heard that, too. That was good. And the U.S. as well. So a lot going on out there on the sports front. Sort of slow on the market front. Not sure we have as much macro stuff to talk about. And we're of the same of the past couple of weeks. But doing good. How are you and yours?
I am well. I am healthy. My beautiful wife still loves me. My kids are healthy. Summer is most definitely here. The pool is most definitely busy. No, look, not anything to not be grateful about on this 4th of July weekend that's coming up. I know you and I will be seeing each other here for a full week in Boca Raton for the Rick Rule Symposium. Looking forward to catching up with a lot of you out there and vetting brand new ideas as well. So a lot to be thankful for, a lot to be grateful for, and a lot going on. I think, look, I've been pretty open about the fact that I think the second half of this year is going to be much like the second half of last year, where that's really where the bulk of the gains happened and provided the fuel for that January top that we saw this year, right? In January, all our portfolios had a lot more money in them than they do right now, right? I mean, that's especially being a natural resource stock investor exclusively on my end of things. But again, it's important to keep in mind that that move started in the second half of last year, leading all the way up to January. The first half of this year, I think, was a healthy consolidation in the metal space that I think is providing and going to provide the fuel for the next leg higher with record high gold prices, which I see hopefully by year end. Silver is going to be a tougher climb just because it touched that 120 level, but I am extremely encouraged by gold bouncing off that 39.15 support, because the next leg down was 3,400 and that wasn't looking pretty. Sitting at 41.20 as we speak, silver was flirting with a 54.53 handle. That wasn't looking pretty. Sitting at 61 right now, dollar index, not too coincidentally, has retreated back below the 101 level. The DXY at 100.89. The 10-year is below 4.50%. And Kevin's already backtracking some of the stuff on inflation, and already I can see him pivoting a little bit in the language. And he said he wasn't going to give forward guidance, but he's already said, you know, today that he sees in the battle against inflation is already showing signs of us gaining on it. So the market took that as maybe a pause in rate hikes, not in September, but maybe December. And frankly, that gives him cover to be what he is by nature, which I think is a dove in hawk's clothing. Thoughts on all of that? I know it was a lot.
I wish I could make the dove noise. I'm unable to do that. So sorry. I can't roll my tongue very well either. So it is what it is. A lot there. But sort of more of the same. So we said last week that weakening inflation or disinflation, put another way, was likely going to give the Fed cover to backtrack on hawkishness or give the market pause in terms of pricing in that next quarter point hike. That's exactly what you've seen. Oil continues to come down. Some of the commodities continue to come down or consolidate sideways. I think you'll see a much lower July print on the CPI than we saw in June. It was something at, 4.2%, I believe. You'll see it probably nearly 1% lower than that, 0.75% lower than that when the July number comes out. And that will give the Fed the cover to, if not, cut, then certainly not do anything, right? Just keep rates where they are, which is different than what we've been hearing and what the market had been pricing in for the past couple of weeks. And you'll recall the market's sort of been all over the place with the 2-year yield going up and the 10-year yield coming down, and it's been sort of confusing. So just to check the tape, the Fed will meet later this month. We're now in July. They will meet at the end of this month. Not going to do anything, right? Now market pricing in an 82% chance of the Fed just staying put. And if I click over to September after they go on August holiday, it's a coin toss, right? It's 46.1% chance of them doing nothing, 46.2% chance of a quarter point hike. And given that inflation numbers that still have to come out between now and then, you'll likely see nothing doing on the Fed side of things. And hopefully that's what can put an end to the correction in the commodities and the precious metals and get them back up on the upswing for the second half, like you were talking about. The dollar remains strong, not 101 like it was, but, you know, nothing grows to the sky, as you've heard me say 100 times, though still yep. Definitely more bullish on the dollar side of things than on the gold, silver, copper side of things. And I expect that to continue here for the next couple of weeks. Market rotation ongoing is the one thing I didn't hear you say and that I meant to talk about last week but didn't. A rolling over of the NASDAQ and a lot of these tech names, Microsoft, Meta, etc., have been soft. S&P continues to print lower highs for the past week or so. Really soft on the NASDAQ side of things, which is tech heavy. And then the things that are rate sensitive, as those rates come down, as the 10-year comes down, are doing well, like the real estate sectors, the utility sectors. And if I look at the S&P sectors over the past week or over the past month, it's, you know, those in addition to insurance, financials, and healthcare that are starting to lead while energy rolls over and while tech rolls over. So slow summer to be sure, but things are moving under the surface there, setting up for that second half, which I think will be good as well. You're right. Gold held in there at right around the $4,000-$3,900 level. For now, out of the woods of testing the lower 3,000s, but it's not back to bullish. It's doing a bit of sideways consolidation, as is copper. And that's the last thing I'll mention. As I've been mentioning for the past couple of weeks, we have no idea what Trump is going to do on the tariff side of things.
Have any idea what he's going to do about anything.
Yeah, that's correct. We're supposed to get the Commerce report. I don't believe that's come out yet. And then Bloomberg ran another article which said the exact same thing as I told you their last one said. He could do tariffs. He could not do tariffs. He could do nothing. So we'll see.
Yeah, look, I don't want to get into the societal part of this podcast too soon because there is a lot going on there. So I'm gonna pivot really quick to say, look, copper spot price is back above six. What has been really interesting to me this week, and I know it's been a slower week on the news front, has been the long-term contracting price on the uranium side of things. So the spot price remains at about $85. The long-term price, that's the price for those of you that aren't aware, that's the price the utilities pay to secure long-term supply. That's at $96. And it's at a high again since they started tracking that. There's a lot of catch up to be had from the spot price to that long-term price. And again, I think that bodes well for the second half of this year where you see that commodity super cycle kick up again after what I think, look, I don't like my portfolio being down from January highs. I prefer my portfolio being at all-time highs at all times, but I do think it was a healthy consolidation. I do think things got a bit toppy for the second half of last year leading into January. I remember being at a conference when gold touched 5,000 in January, I believe. And I mean, the line just to get into the conference was like, unlike anything I had ever seen in Vancouver. And that's after attending that conference quite a few times. So I think the consolidation has been healthy. I like what I'm seeing in the uranium space. I like what I'm seeing in the metals space thus far. And yeah, where's that next technical level on the gold side, Nick, that you need to see to be quote unquote out of the woods and back in bullish territory? In my simple non-technician brain, I see 4,400 in my head, but I'm making that up. So you tell me.
I mean, it needs to close and stay above nearly the 4,200 level, like 4,190. If we can get above and stay above that for a short term amount of time, then it would go on to test that $4,400 level, and we can get back to bullish. As of now, the chart is still breaking down, or consolidating is probably a better word, between 3,900 and 4,200, and it needs to close on the top side of that to go up to the next bullish level.
Excellent. I we should note, look, we're going to be in Florida all of next week. There won't be a Bizarro World podcast for the week next week. We promise to make it up to you in spades with new ideas, new thoughts, and a lot of vetting under the hood the week after, reporting back from what we get out of Florida. That's going to be an extremely, extremely busy conference for all of us that I think will yield a lot of fruit for our labor there. So excited to get out there and excited to come back and report to you guys, not next week, but the week after. So happy 4th.
Thank you for doing the housekeeping. And I'm going to go back to uranium and then nuclear for a second, because I had it on the sheet. I might as well get it out of the way. And then we might go a little quick this week. I might be able to bridge the gap right to the Bizarro Banter section here if I do this carefully. So where do I want to start? We had talked about nuclear and uranium last week, and in fact, for the past couple of weeks, I'm noting that the U.S. had a goal of getting four small modular reactors reaching criticality by the 4th of July, sort of one of those, you know, 250th anniversary celebration things or themes, and that has now happened. So that was successful. Progress being made on that front, and not just in the U.S., but Canada in the last week of June put out a 10-year plan for nuclear, which involves a great expansion as well, wanting to build 10 new reactors, starting at least two in the next 7 years, and wanting to regain some of its leadership on the nuclear uranium side of things. Another announcement from Cameco, by the way, that they were delaying or, you know, shuttering or shutting down for a short amount of time, they say, the Cigar Lake, because there's problems with the nearby mill that they use to process that ore. They say it's not going to affect their production guidance for the year, but that's the second announcement now we've seen going back a couple of weeks ago to them doing the same short-term idling because of floods in the area, which harkens back to that precariousness of supply that kicked off the last uranium bull market all those years ago, 20 years ago now, in fact, which is crazy. And what else? There's something else I wanted to say about that. The equities are still weak, whether it's Cameco or whether it's some of these fuel suppliers like Centrus or whether it's the URA ETF. Those charts look more bearish than gold or silver or copper. And it presents, I think, a long-term contrarian opportunity because all the fundamentals are bullish. The announcements from governments are bullish. The cutting of the red tape is bullish, and nuclear is clearly needed. And so you can use this period of soft equities and bullish fundamentals to get positioned in some of these high quality names, some of which we've mentioned in the last couple of episodes. Let me see. I wanted to tap dance. Let me do some tap dance. And we've got a heat wave in France and on the East Coast. And funny, not funny, ironic, whatever word you want to use, France is a nuclear nation that seemingly doesn't want to embrace air conditioning. And the rivers were so warm that they were, unable to run their nukes at full capacity because they couldn't use the rivers to cool them down. Inside of that heat wave and inside of France and specifically inside of Paris, the mayor has blamed the heat wave, at least in part, on us, the United States, saying that our air conditioning and by extension, our emissions are the reason that we should bear, and we do, in her eyes, we do bear responsibility for the heat wave that France is currently facing, to which I say, fuck you, America. It's July 4th. Go look at a chart of per capita emissions and tell me where China falls on that chart, which is a nation you failed to mention in that rant. It's well above the United States. It's well above any other country on Earth. And oh, by the way, there was an accord, an agreement. You know those words. They stem from French. That was signed in your city, the Paris Climate Accord, that gave China an out until the year 2030 of our Lord for their rise in emissions. So check yourself, Miss Mayor of France, before you go running your lips. The other thing is, grids are being greatly affected by the heat, including on the East Coast, where even before the heat wave hit, there was an article in the Financial Times last week. It was quoting the CEO of a utility company, Calvin Butler, the CEO of Exelon, saying that, look, the U.S. is, and this is not news to us, but maybe news to some of our newer listeners, that the U.S., the grids aren't in such good shape, and we can face blackouts because of rising power demand, not just from AC in the summer, but from data centers, et cetera, et cetera. You know that very well in Tejas, which has faced blackouts and blackouts over the past couple of years. And lo and behold, the heat wave hits the East Coast this week, and we've got warnings from grid operators saying the exact same thing. We've got warnings from Mr. Mamdani in New York, who we also discussed recently in terms of a socialism discussion that we had last episode, asking people to set their thermostats to 78 degrees. I missed one thing. In France and some of the European headquarter buildings, they were also limiting the temperature of the air conditioning, but only on the lower floors for the peasants, not for the higher floors where the executives
rules aren't for us, and
the higher upset. So anyway, back to the U.S. and New York, who is saying that we should have our thermostats set to 78 degrees. We'll see how that goes. I guess the warning is fair, but there was a very funny tweet by Mr. Ron DeSantis saying that, I guess this is the warm embrace of collectivism that that gentleman was referencing after he got elected. So a lot there. I thought that was funny.
I thought it was funny as well. And I found it ironic because we get the same warnings here in Texas, but nobody ever calls that socialism or the failure of capitalism or the failure of any of that stuff. So it was hilarious though. I mean, anything for a good laugh, right? I'll absolutely take it.
And all that just to tie it back to uranium and nuclear, you wouldn't have these problems if, you know, you were proactive about cutting the red tape for nuclear development and, sped up these programs that are now coming to the fore, some of which we discussed last week with the $17.5 billion, et cetera, et cetera. And then last thing, and maybe this will transition us to the bizarro, is I saw NPR had an article going back to the first thing I said about the reach and the criticality on the four SMRs. And half the article is like negative, like talking about safety concerns and we're going so fast and they just can't be happy with the progress given the leadership from which it comes is how it read to me. And to that I say also, maybe not fuck you, but come on, man, like we got to be happy about something and we got to cheer progress when we're making it. Like there's a reason we're getting these grid warnings. There's a reason they're telling you to have your thermostat set at 78. Just congratulate these nuclear companies on the progress that's being made and cheer it on, because it's one of the best solutions we have, not just for increased stable baseload power and capacity, but also for emission free power generation, which that sort of side of the aisle is on. So come on, y'all, let's not poo poo stuff just because the guy in charge is having some wins. Like, let's cheer on what's good for the country and everyone who lives in it.
No, what 100% correct. Well said. Again, I find it highly ironic that the same people, the boomers that got us into mostly the $39 trillion debt that we have and unsustainable war budgets and an erosion of our constitution. We'll talk about the Supreme Court here in just a bit and what they did well and what, you know, I think they didn't do so well. For those who care. But when it comes to this, I find it ironic that the same people that sacrificed a lot of future generations' social security, fiscal and monetary responsibility, all of that stuff are the same people fighting against a solution that literally can be passed down for generations on end, right? Like, yes, the upfront costs for nuclear are substantial. Once the infrastructure is in place and supply is secured, it is the cleanest, cheapest baseload energy you could have on the planet, right? And so, like you said, look, it's America's 250th birthday. We're going to get into a lot of the shit that's wrong, because there's a lot of shit wrong and it's piling up by the day, believe you me. But we got to celebrate wins, folks, and we got to celebrate the good, and we got to celebrate the advances, because amidst the chaos and the bizarro-ness, there is a lot of good still to be celebrated. And yes, could there be more? Sure, we'll talk about it here in just a second. But yeah, cheer the winds on, man. Go. You know, put a smile on, and let's be less tribal, and let's give credit where credit is due. And look, on the critical metal side, I've said this since the beginning, it's the one thing this administration has done really, really well. I hope they get even more aggressive with it, fast-tracking the permitting, accelerating funding, working on all levels of establishing a domestic critical metal supply chain that includes nuclear. Kudos to the admin for that. Definitely give them credit where credit is due. Yeah, let's get right to it. There is a lot going on. Look, it's our country's 250th birthday. And to celebrate, the House refuses to take a vote on whether or not we should allow Israel to fuse, in essence, with our military. And let's be absolutely clear. One could make an argument. I wouldn't make this argument, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here. One could make an argument that, look, if Israel is going to be a real partner and is going to provide us full access to their databases and their technology and their personnel, that if we reciprocate as partners, you could make an argument. And again, I totally disagree with this argument, but that this may be healthy in the short or midterm for America to have a partner that is, say what you say about the genocides, because there's multiple now that Israel is committing. They're good at what they do, and they're good at defending their country. They're extreme with it, clearly, at the cost of hundreds of thousands of innocent lives. Separate conversation. But when it comes to technology, when it comes to being entrepreneurial, they're amongst the best in the world. There is a reason that they're a country of 9 million people that wield such a large and powerful stick, right? There is a reason why they haven't been obliterated yet by all of the people they attack. It's not because they're dumb and helpless and they don't know how to defend or they don't know how to counter. Again, I think they go to the extreme opposite of that. But you could make an argument that, man, if we're going to get all those synergies and we're going to get access to that stuff, well, then maybe this isn't the worst thing in the world. But when I read this thing, and it's a one-sided thing where we give them all the access, we give them access to our database, all our technology, all of that, and we don't get that back, what the fuck are we doing, y'all? It's America's 250th birthday. Y'all couldn't wait till like the week after for the House to not have a vote. Roe Kanan from California and Thomas Massie are the really like the only two fighting for this. Thomas Massie was already outed by AIPAC. He'll be out here in the fall time or by year end. And all they asked for was a vote. Like, can we get on the record who's for this so that when this blows up, maybe literally in our face, we can have historical documentation about the people that allowed this to happen. And of course, nobody would even bring it to a vote. And again, it speaks to the lobbyist influence in America, the hijacking of our military, the hijacking of our country via billionaire political donors. And yes, Supreme Court, you messed that one up this week by allowing unlimited donations by individuals in for lobbying, essentially, is what they said. Go ahead, and if you got the money, then hey, pay to play. That's essentially what the Supreme Court ruling said, right? So it's not a coincidence to me that right at the same time that all this is happening, a U.S. Air Force officer named Jason Watson bravely, and be absolutely clear, you could disagree with his message, and his message was Trump has sold our country out, has committed treason, essentially. We should impeach him. We should convict him. We should arrest him. All of that. You could agree with or disagree with his statement. You can't disagree with the bravery that it took for this young 20-year officer, Air Force officer, to get up on the steps in his uniform, knowing damn well what the repercussions are. Potential prison time, potential loss of his pension, potential demotion, or just frankly being blackballed from the military, especially by this administration, who just arrested Olympic canoeist. And he's facing 10 years for violently grabbing a piece of the liner that was floating in the reflecting pool that the Trump administration messed up. A potential 10-year prison term. And they're out there, they're having press conferences about this, bragging about this on 4th of July week. The amount of corruption, the amount of stupidity, the amount of gall is appalling. And man, I hope this Jason Watson individual inspires more to be active, to use their First Amendment right. He preached peacefully. He was clear about that. But it's incredible to me that this gentleman's arrested in front of the same Capitol steps where the J6 rioters that were smearing feces in our country's capital are maybe going to get millions of dollars in reparations for being prosecuted and persecuted by the Biden administration. That's where we're at in the 4th of July week, 250th birthday of America. That was a lot. I had to get the rant off. Any thoughts on Israeli military and U.S. military fusing? It's
that was a lot. I hadn't seen the Jason Watson stuff, so I'll have to look it up. But I guess I'll just go back to what I was saying last week about the tribalism and the entrenching, because you can see it, whether it's Marjorie Taylor Greene or Thomas Massie, those who are refusing to toe the line, even with valid concerns and criticisms about the loss of our, you know, military and treasure and lives and all that sort of stuff, are they're being pushed out for not toeing the line. So, and now Tucker Carlson, who has long been a darling of the right, is on the list as well. I don't know if
now
you saw.
Now I agree with 90% of what he said.
Correct. Like, I don't know if you saw his rant. It was like an hour and a half. I only watched a couple of minutes of it to get the gist. But, you know, he was saying, he framed it up, and you're talking about the fusing, like, yeah, the U.S. and in Israel buddies. He was like, imagine your buddy called you up and was like, hey, man, my home's getting invaded. Why don't you come over here and help me out? And you're like, all right, man, you're my buddy. I'll come help you out. And then when you go over to your buddy's house, he leaves. He goes and robs the house next door and kills everybody in it. And, you know, he's equating that to Israel and what's happening in Lebanon, et cetera. So, and now he's being ostracized from the right because nobody can just call it like it is and have some common sense about this stuff. So clearly it's not the best arrangement. Clearly we didn't go in there and reach our objectives or even go in there with clear objectives. You know, we were told last year that after we bombed Iran that, you know, it was completely and utterly decimated and their capacity to enrich uranium. But that's why we went back in again this year. And then, oh, by the way, did you see the count by CNN that Trump has won this war 38 times? Hunter Biden was tweeting about it.
He nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize.
It's like no one else has ended wars 38 times. And still no concessions by Iran. And by the way, like we bombed them, you know, over the weekend, we were doing more stuff. And then surprise, right before the market opened this past Monday morning, we're back to a ceasefire. Like it's getting sickening and also predictable. But there's no like concessions on the nuclear side of things, which is the reason we went in there. And then you get Trump trying to claim victory on the gas prices coming down when they wouldn't have had to come the fuck down if we didn't launch an invasion to begin with. So a whole lot of nonsense out there. And well, what else? You mentioned the Supreme Court. I don't want to get there yet, but you didn't mention the crypto king Trump, right?
Oh,
What was the number he made?
$1.4 billion.
Correct. On the crypto markets, you know, I mean, total and utter grift, plain as day, when the Trump coin and the Melania coin have lost the early holders, you know, 90% or more of the value of those coins. And Trump is booking wins in the billion dollar terms. I mean, again, it's like what I was saying last week, like, you know, imagine if Kamala Harris like had these debacles with the, you know, building or was building a White House ballroom or whatever it is, or had the fountain debacle or the reflecting ripple debacle. I mean, this is what they were yelling at Hunter Biden about and the Bidens about, right? Corruption in Ukraine and getting rich and using the office. And they're doing the exact same things and pretending it's normal or okay when it's obviously not. So, and that's what gets me so disenfranchised with both sides, obviously, and not to make this a both sidesism thing, but it's like they're all doing quasi the same thing, whether it's insider trading in Congress or now all the way up to the presidential level. Like, I'm over it, man. Like, just so over it, which I think hopefully a lot of the country is getting to as well.
I believe that. It's worth noting on the Melania coin that $500 million of liquidity came directly from the Middle East. It's also worth noting that on 4th of July weekend, the Trumpster will be showing off his brand new Air Force One gift from the Middle East. Again, it's amazing the gall that these people have, and we'll see how it ends. I I've been watching a lot of the Founding Fathers documentaries, and I can't help but think back the last time that we felt like we were being invaded by foreigners with, you know, outsized influence and taxation without representation, how that ended up. So ripe for a fourth turning indeed.
Yeah, and I know we had a good conversation last week, and I'll probably take it back there. You mentioned the Supreme Court a couple of times. And, well, first on Air Force One or Two or whatever it is, I wanted to mention, I don't know if you saw, and actually a positive, so positive before negative, that Trump rolled back some, I don't know, protections is the right word, some regulations on supersonic flight over over the United States. And that caught my attention this week. So I read the article about it and I had no idea, but there's a company called, do I have it up here? Maybe I'll be able to tell you if my mouse works. It is called Boom Supersonic, who is developing a new supersonic plane, which I was not in the loop on. So read up on that for a second, figured it was worth mentioning so I could give you guys some interesting tidbits. But this company has got a new supersonic jet that flies like, I don't know, 1.4, 1.7 Mach. Yeah, 1.7 Mach cruise speed, gets you to New York, gets you to London from New York in 3.5 hours. And they've already pre-sold these planes to some major airlines like United and American and Japan Air. And so that was the reason Trump rolled back these regulations stemming back to the 1970s. They've been on the books for 50 years about not being able to fly a supersonic flight over American landmass. And that's a good thing. Like, come on, bring on the supersonic jets. Absolutely. They've got some new engineering that, you know, don't make the booms rattle or reach Earth like they did back then. And so, yeah. Chalk that up in the win column for sure, just like the nuclear regulations, like call a win. And then, yeah, what you were saying about the Supreme Court, you know, I was saying last week that Citizens United was, you know, one of the main detriments and causes of the latest or ongoing downfall of this nation in terms of the money coming into politics and letting the oligarchists call all the shots, whether those are American or foreign, as you were just pointing out. So don't like those decisions at all. Believe there should be less money in politics. But they got some stuff right as well. And I guess I'm just going to pound my chest for a second because I was telling you last week, I pretty much laid it out and it's exactly how it went. Like they weren't going to let him fire Lisa Cook. They weren't going to let him end birthright citizenship. And they were going to prevent boys from playing against girls in sports. And that's precisely how it went. So I think they got all those. I think they got all those right.
Agreed. And look, back to your home state right now of Washington State. I say right now because I feel like they're making it harder and harder on you, despite, you know, how comfortable you are and how much you love where you live. But, you know, they in my opinion, and they got the trans ruling right. Like we talked about it last week in spades, and you have girls and I have nieces. And the bottom line is if you're born a biological male, you can identify however the heck you want to identify. It is your right. I 100% agree with that. However, you should not be able to beat up my nieces in a wrestling competition. Like, you should not. Just period, right? And so the Supreme Court did right on that. They did right on birthright citizenship. But man, did they get the unlimited money in politics? Did they get that one wrong? And even the birthright citizenship thing, it was amazing to me that four Supreme Court judges voted against something that is in the Constitution, which provides a path forward if you don't agree with birthright citizenship. This is one of the things that I disagree with Massey about, right? Like he actually thought that the ruling was flawed. And he's entitled to that opinion. That's okay, right? It's again, I believe him to be a man of integrity when it comes to his political opinions, and I'm sure he's got his reasons for that. But there is a process by which you can make amendments. The Supreme Court isn't the process by which you get rid of that. So yeah, no, some good, some bad, and more to come for sure from the
Yeah,
Supreme
I mean,
Court.
I saw some of those arguments. So they want to basically split it, right, on the birthright citizenship thing, saying that basically illegals that are, illegal immigrants that are here for a prolonged time illegally that have kids, those would not be included in the thing. So I guess that's a separate debate, but I think the ruling overall was right. Like the Constitution is the Constitution, and it's one of the things that makes America great is, being the place where people want to come because of the upside and the prosperity that it does offer for those are, who are willing to work hard. And I know you feel the same way as, I do
Absolutely.
as, son and of immigrants. So that's that. God, the Washington State, and not just Washington State, but and again, I feel like a broken record. I
That's
said
where I was
this last
going.
week, like they're not doing themselves any favors when you get the transgender ruling, which it was for West Virginia and Idaho were the states where they were trying to do the separation, do the ban, whereas obviously in Democrat states, Washington, where I live, California, et cetera, they lean the other way. And I was saying that they're not doing themselves any favors politically because the majority is not on their side, and it's a pretty common sense thing. And just like I was saying about toe on the line earlier with Tucker and those for the Israel stuff, like they do the same dumb shit on the left. Like the ruling was correct, and you get the Attorney General of Washington coming
I
out
saw
saying
that.
like,
That's where I
in
was going.
Washington, that's not going to happen. You get Pritzker in Illinois coming out and saying, like, in Illinois, that's not going to happen. You get Newsom in California saying, like, we're not going to ostracize trans people. And it's like, dude, 50% of the population is girls. And the way the language comes out of their either mouths or fingertips on their keyboard when they tweet, it's like, wait, you think this is cruel to boys?
That's what Tim Walz said.
But not to 50% of the population who's having opportunities stolen and being put in danger and in several cases already known, like being harmed because of the physical difference in boys and girls. It's like, look, man, like just call a spade, like give that one up. That's not the hill to die on, man. And like, I think you're going to lose yourself votes long term. It's on the ballot here in Washington State in November. And I'm pretty sure it's, going to come out the way that I believe the silent majority on this thinks, right? Because a lot of people don't want to talk about it because it's one of those sensitive issues. And I see even lots of the media, they still don't say boy or male. Like even the Wall Street Journal article I was reading, it said those who were recorded as males at birth. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, recorded as male? Like what? Like what's this Orwellian language, man? Like what are we doing? Like I don't understand. So let me get off that topic because I've been pretty clear on that. Also on the ballot, which I've talked about a couple of times in Washington State, is the income tax. And we're now into July. They had to have the signatures in by the end of June, which I collected signatures for, and people more than willing to sign that petition. I carried it around some of my kids' ball games, and I had parents signing, like, after the kids play ball, they all run to the playground and play. And I had parents coming up to me saying, "Hey, what was that petition?" Like that weren't even on the team, like weren't even on our team, just other kids' parents at the playground, like, "Oh, I'll sign that, man." Like we
Yeah,
moved
heck
here from
yeah.
Seattle to get rid of that stuff. And anyway, so I believe the final numbers aren't out yet, but I believe it collected the most signatures of any initiative ever in Washington State to get on the ballot. They needed 400,000. I think they were going to get over like 600,000 signatures. So maybe the tide is turning. We shall see.
Nick Hodge for City Council. I see it. I see it. I see it in your future, sir. Yeah, look, the other thing that I want to highlight that the Supreme Court got right is protections on the Fourth Amendment, right? They ruled that police departments cannot use geofencing to collect evidence that they have to get a warrant before they go ahead and use that technology. The technology basically takes, you know, you can target entire neighborhoods at a time, and it collects all of the data that's digital, that's, you know, in the air. And the Supreme Court said, no, you absolutely cannot do that. You have to be specific to the target that you're targeting, and you have to get a warrant for it, because that is what is in the Constitution. So again, a lot of good, some not so good. It's relative depending on what you believe and what you feel. It is what it is, but it's most definitely a time of change on this 250th year of this great experiment that we call America.
It actually sets me up perfectly for the Pope, if you want to indulge me for 5 to 7 minutes.
Anytime that Mr. Hodge pontificates about the Pope, I am all ears.
So the Pope, and this has been on our sheet for a couple of weeks, we haven't had a chance to get to it. You know, I forget when it was. It might have been in May or early June. He put out this encyclical on artificial intelligence, some of which you were just talking about, data collection and spying and surveillance. But this was like a long, obviously, religious document citing Catholic history, you know, all the way back to Bible times and Tower of Babel and the construction of Jerusalem, and basically was a warning about technology, AI specifically, and how it needs to be throttled and or controlled, and basically needs to be a tool of humans, not meant to rule humans or used to control humans, sort of like Neo in the famous movie, right? And saying that it shouldn't be used to exploit the poor. And let me give you a succinct summary before I ramble any longer, because I prepared myself today. The two-sentence summary is this: AI can and should serve humanity only if it remains subordinate to human dignity, truth, work, freedom, justice, peace, and communion. If it becomes an architecture of control, profit, war, or self-divinization, it becomes a new Tower of Babel. And he's talking about, you know, using it for war, how that, you know, it could obviously be a bad thing, making wars shorter and more violent and less noticeable and less human, and all sorts of stuff, right? So there is some good warnings in there. You can find lots of summaries of it online. And I'm not going to tear the entire thing to pieces, but you know, there obviously needs to be some worker protections, and it shouldn't be in the hands of the few, which is the other thing that the Pope was talking about, like going back to what we were saying 20 minutes ago about oligarchy and the Middle East and the Israeli army, for example. Like, it shouldn't be these small enclave billionaire entities that are controlling these technologies for all of humanity. And with that, I agree. Here's where I don't have as much respect for,
drum roll,
you know, being preached to by the Pope. And it goes, you know, right back to the raping of kids and adolescents and even college folks, and the ongoing cover up, which I've talked about a lot on this podcast. I've cited local examples here in Spokane as recently as last year of, you know, kids coming into our school because a priest at their school had been caught, whatever, buying panties for some of his flock, had already been transferred here from Seattle because he was sleeping with somebody's wife in that parish. And most recently in the New York Times was a long article about the University of Notre Dame, where a priest was having a weighing scandal, I believe is what they called it, where he was in charge of a certain dorm or a group of students, and was having them weigh in naked for their safety, right? With multiple complaints documented against this priest. And here we are in 2026, on from John Paul back in the 90s. We're now two popes later, and they're still just transferring the folks around. Like, this guy, the priest in the Notre Dame example, is living his best life in a retirement home, man. Like, unable to be reached for or contacted for a response to the New York Times article after having been transferred to another university after the Notre Dame complaint. So I get where you're coming from, new pope guy, but also, like, get your fucking house in order before you try to preach humanity and sanctity and reverence for humanity in terms of technology, because you've had a lot of irreverence for humanity over the past century or so. And then I kind of went in a loopy loop there, but iPhone birth control was also on there, and that ties into the technology aspect of it. I don't know if you saw, let me get my article up here. There was a report by the National Bureau of Economic Research in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where you will know there are lots of Ivy League institutions. And this study went through data from when the iPhone was first released and was monopolized by AT&T. I don't know if you remember that chapter in our history, but from 2007 to 2011, you could only get an iPhone on the AT&T network. And they used that all that data from folks who got the iPhone early on to do a study on the decline in birth rates in folks that had that AT&T service in those years. And the conclusion was that the advent of the iPhone is contributing to the decline in the birth rate. It's a very long study. It's 85-page PDF. I'm staring at it right now. And there was a little bit of back and forth in certain corners. I was reading about it in the Reason magazine, basically saying it was kind of bunk science. And then the more I dug into it, it's, I don't know if it's bunk science, but it's not the main cause. Like, basically the gist is this, you know, as countries develop, industrialize, get more educated, the birth rate goes down because you don't need to have six kids to go and plow your field, basically. So the birth rate has been going down anyway. It's been going down more precipitously in the past 20 years, and not just in the U.S., but also in Europe and also in some parts of Asia. Some of that was because in Asia, you know, there was limits on the amount of kids you could have in Vietnam and China. Those have since been lifted. But the paper was searching for some ubiquitous answer to why birth rates are going down across the globe. And the paper pointed to the iPhone, but it's much more complex topic than that.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm going on for a little while.
No, this is good.
I've been wanting to talk about it for a while. So basically it comes down to not just having fewer kids, which isn't a result of the iPhone. It comes down to having fewer marriages, fewer partnerships in general. And there's lots of reasons for that, like the Great Recession, the global financial crisis comes up a lot. Like, you know, people lost their homes, people were scared for their futures, they lost their jobs, they weren't in a financial place to have kids. And so that precipitated a further decline in the birth rate when people slowed down. People point to the newer generation, younger millennials and Gen Z or whatever we're calling them, having less sexual relationships, right? They do less drugs, they drink less, they have less promiscuous sex, and they have less sexual partners in general. Some of that, by the way, is a positive, which Reason was key to point out. Like fewer teenage pregnancies is a good thing, right? Even though it contributes to a lower birth rate. But I guess that's it. I don't know where I was going to go from there, but all that to say, people, this is where I was going to go. And you can point to COVID as well, because, you know, people were meant to stay in their homes. They were meant to stay separated.
Yeah.
And there's a hangover or a prolonged effect from that that's led to more social disintegration and people content to, you know, be by themselves. So all that to say that the paper that called, what was the title? Is the iPhone Birth Control? Causal evidence from AT&T's 2007 to 2011 carrier monopoly. The answer is no, not at least explicitly. It's one factor. Like, you know, they talk about people watching porn or people looking at idealized lives of others on social media and thinking they're not going to be able to have that level of success in their own familial relationships, so they're content not to have them. Like, all that is part of it, but it's not like the overall cause. So I don't know what the overall cause is, Gerardo. Maybe you do, but I thought that whole debate or response to that paper was interesting, especially because it came at the same time as the Pope warning us about new technologies and such. So I'm glad I got that out. It's been on the sheet for a long time, and it took me eight minutes. Sorry.
And look, it's a complex topic. I don't think you can point to a single cause, right? I think it is a combination of a lot of those things that you mentioned, and the fact that, and you mentioned it, you know, this younger generation, and even people our age, right? Just don't see the upward mobility that, you know, was once like the hallmark of this great country for sure, right? But definitely other places as well. So I think it all, you know, I think it all kind of is interconnected. And then, yeah, it's a great title for clickbait to you know, ask if it's the iPhone that did it. But most definitely a complex subject that I'm sure will be the subject of a lot of investigation here in the coming years.
Well, as a demographer, I'm sure Neil Howe will have something to say about it post fourth turning, which is another good tie in there, right? You've got all these multiple currents of the fourth turning and uncertainty and distrust in institutions that maybe the fertility curve will start going back up once we get into a first turning, whenever that may be.
Let's hope so. And then let's hope that we make it through this turning in the next several years in halfway decent shape, and that, you know, we get to the other side of this thing. Cause again, wow. I hate to belabor the point, but it's America's 250th birthday. And the headline is the Department of Justice defies a court order to unredact the Epstein files
again,
protecting the names of elite pedophiles. But the canoe, the Olympic canoe guy,
sent some fireworks right into Congress.
Insane. Insane. Anyhow, listen, great chat. That's been fun. Not a lot for the premium portion of the podcast because it was a quiet week in the markets with Canada Day and the 4th of July week and markets closed and, you know, everybody seemingly either on vacation or getting ready to celebrate the 4th of July here and celebrating Canada Day up north. But I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. We will see you in 2 weeks. This was the 371st episode of our weekly therapy session. This was a good one too, that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Y'all take care. Have a beautiful 4th of July weekend. Enjoy the time with your people while you have them. Take care and have a good time, everybody. Be safe.
See ya.